Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Wednesday edition. Today's date is the third day of November 2010. Of course, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you all here with me for another important broadcast. Got a great discussion coming up today with a friend of mine who has been working really hard on many of the same subjects that I cover on a daily basis here on the French Connection. Her name is, of course, Dr. Nancy Turner Banks, MD, and she has been looking into some of the subjects we talk about, but from a medical standpoint, or from a public health standpoint, or from a geopolitical / health standpoint. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about her book, which is a fantastic read. I skimmed it through once, and then I read it again just to make sure that I had the facts that I wanted to share with you and Nancy when we discussed it. It's called AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire. She goes into a lot of stuff about the background of this crime gang, especially, you know, the East India Company that was involved in opium smuggling and dealing in India and in China, the Sassoon family and the Delano family and so forth. We've talked about that before, but also about how these colonial powers that have lost their outward grip over the Third World and used new means to control the Third World. And as the populations in the Third World have exploded and the poverty has been inflicted upon these nations, usually through the IMF, World Bank, and so forth. And it's the same criminals that we're always talking about here, Dominique Strauss-Kahn today. But back in the day, it was the same criminals, just another generation of them. And she also talks about some researchers. One of them was a woman named Krim, an Irgun member who has received accolades from across the scientific world, but couldn't be anything more than a criminal, in my view, because this woman is propagating the idea that AIDS is a disease when it's never been established that it is. We're going to talk about that with Nancy as well. There's all kinds of subjects we're going to bring up today, but I'm going to bring her up right now. Nancy, are you with me?
I'm here, Daryl. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, Nancy. And here's the thing. You know, we have in our past interviews, and anybody who thinks that we should go deeper into the AIDS lead-up story or whatever, what they need to do is go into the archives and click on Nancy's name and bring up the older files, because we've covered a great deal about AIDS and about vaccines and so forth. What I'm going to try to do today is weave the subject matter from her book into the conversation so that you can get an idea of the kind of quality this book presents. And it actually is written in narrative form, but is well cited. It's an interesting mix of kind of a novel / factual book, and it's an enjoyable read, although the subject matter is not that enjoyable. But it's an easy read and it's well written, and you got a talent for writing, Nancy. There's no question about it. You know, it gripped me when I first started reading it. And I like the style of the writing. So it's a long book. So if it's not well written like that, you wouldn't be able to sit through it. And I find it a breeze to go through anyway. But I want you to give everybody a little snapshot, if you would, Nancy, about you know, the lead up to AIDS, because you wanted to talk a little bit about AIDS and maybe this woman Krim and what her role is in the cancer stuff. I mean, we're talking cancer and AIDS are huge industries now.
Big
industry.
First of all, thanks for complimenting me on the book, because I really think that true life is actually more interesting than fiction. The problem is that history has been turned into fiction by the chroniclers that work for the people who write history. And so it's really left up to people like you and me and other people who are not in the history profession to really bring out the truths of history or the hidden facts.
I agree.
One of the things that I think that happened, let me just, you brought up Mathilde Krim, and I want to speak about her in terms of the AIDS and cancer issue, because she is a very interesting woman. She was, in her early years, she married, she is said to be a Catholic. And in her early years, she married a man who was an Israeli. And as a result, she went to Israel, and she was a gun runner. She was a terrorist for, as you say, the Irgun group, who were known terrorists. They were responsible for the, I think it was the
King David Hotel bombing, yeah.
Which hotel it was?
King David.
King David Hotel bombing, exactly, and any number of other terrorist acts in the early days of the state of when Israel was trying to form itself into a state. After that, she returned to Switzerland and she got a PhD in biological sciences, and at some point she divorced this husband, came to the United States, and married a man, a Hollywood producer who was very wealthy. His name was Krim, and that's why she then became entwined and with LBJ. Apparently, she was sleeping in the White House the night of the Six Day War began, the attack on the USS Cole.
Yes, Cole. No, the Cole was not with LBJ. That would have been the USS Liberty.
The USS Liberty, exactly, the USS Liberty. And so she apparently had, I couldn't confirm it, but there were a lot of insinuations that she may have been romantically entwined with LBJ. But nevertheless, she spent any number of nights in the White House. Then when Nixon came along, apparently she and another woman who were in this Hollywood set convinced Nixon to put his money into this war on cancer. Now, it was interesting that they decided to push him into studying viruses as the cause of cancer, because this was at the time when people were really beginning to figure out that cancer was a problem with energy metabolism. And another German researcher by the name of Otto Warburg had a part of the infamous Warburg family, but he was an incredible scientist, had really figured out how the mechanism of cancer, and it had to do with energy and a little organelle in the cell called the mitochondria that makes most of our energy. Just as that information was coming to fruition and people were beginning to understand how cancer functioned, here comes Matilda Krim and decides to push for this war on cancer, which totally pushed research money away from this very good science into this money pit of looking for viruses that they knew from the beginning were not the cause of cancer. Mm-hmm. So this went on for several years. In the meantime, in the background of all of this, the Vietnam War was going on. Drugs were being flown into the United States and into the Western countries. And a new generation of American kids were being introduced to all of these drugs.
So can I ask a question, Nancy? The drugs were weakening our immune systems because any toxins – drugs are toxic to the body in the forms that they're delivered on the streets, for sure. But at the same time, there was a lot of above-ground testing that had gone on throughout our childhoods. And so
it,
we were
enormous.
Yeah. So we had a radiation situation with half-lives in our soil, and we had strontium-90 everywhere. And I remember I talked to he was the father of the anti-nuclear program across the country, and I forgot his name anyway, but I had him on the radio twice, and he stated clearly that most of our disease conditions are a mixture of environmental toxins such as drugs and so forth, and also radiation. And so we're setting ourselves up. And then when the vaccines were mixed in, is it correct to say that now we've got all three elements to make pretty much anybody, even healthy people, sick? Is that
it was a fluoride, it was pesticides. It was almost like we were being bombarded from air, land, and sea. With all of these toxins, which our bodies, from an evolutionary point, had never been exposed to. And so that our bodies were actually using energy trying to detox our system. So in the meantime, they spent billions of dollars in this war on cancer, which netted very little. And it was about to wind down. And just as it was winding down, that's when these young homosexual men started showing up in emergency rooms very sick. And so here comes Matilda Krim again. Yeah. She convinces the powers that be, which means that she has some influence that I think people need to look at very carefully, convinces people that this particular war on cancer should be transferred to the war on AIDS. And she erroneously says that it's going to be a worldwide heterosexual problem, which they knew from the beginning was not true. So now the money that was funneled into the war on cancer starts getting funneled into the war on AIDS, a disease that was made up, and they started giving people drugs that now were actually going to shorten their lives.
Yeah. And are they still giving those same drugs?
They are still giving drugs that have the same effect. I think the first drug that they gave was a drug called AZT, and AZT is what they claimed was a DNA chain terminator. What that meant is that this particular drug would insert itself into the DNA, and because it was an erroneous chemical, it would stop the DNA of the virus from replicating. But studies have shown that it's not possible for this drug to do it. But this drug does have damaging effects on the mitochondria that I talked about. And so people who already were energy deficient because their mitochondria was not making enough of a molecule called ATP, they were actually killed off by this AZT drug to make it appear as if we were having an epidemic, when the epidemic was really a drug-caused epidemic, not only the drugs in the environment, but the drugs that the doctors were giving these patients.
Now, the drug in the environment, that one of them that we've brought up in the past, if you listen to some of our older work that we did together, Nancy, was the nitrites and the amyl nitrates that were being used quite liberally by the gay community. And what that served was a real destroyer of that mitochondria, the one that, in a way, that set these people up for a slam dunk sickness. I mean, they were doing this from environmental poisoning of themselves, cocaine, lifestyle, lots of contact with bodily fluids from other people in some of these bathhouses, and then on top of that, the nitrates, and then when you give them the AZT, these people are done. They're finished.
Yeah, and remember, this was only a small subsection of the gay community. Most of the gay community was never sick and did not participate in these things. But there was a sub-segment of the gay community who really had a very a lifestyle which really was not conducive to health.
Yeah,
because of the things that you just stated. And one of the drugs that they were taking, is they called it poppers, and it was amyl nitrate. And this drug originally came out of on the market to help people who had angina or a heart condition, because it dilated the blood vessels in the heart and allowed oxygen to get to the heart muscle. But it also was used as creatively as what we call a sexual doping agent, and it was almost synonymous with the gay bathhouses and the discos of that period. And so people used this drug liberally, and it was a very toxic drug.
I think they still sell it in America, don't they?
They still sell the butyl nitrate and other kinds of brands. It's the amyl nitrate is back. They put it back on prescription. They took it off of prescription for a while, and then they put it back on prescription. But that doesn't mean you can't get it. I mean, almost everything you seem to be able to get in this country, whether it's prescription or not.
Well, so here we are. We're moving toward this woman's involvement, and she almost seems like the Flexner of our time, the guy that was using and morphing different diseases and calling them first polio, and then he called it something else. But basically, it was toxins and environmental toxins, and of course, they always got their statistics from very crowded poverty-stricken areas where people were not getting heated houses and good sanitation and the rest of it. And of course, using the statistics from these ghettos to say, look, we've got a disease that needs a vaccine. So they've always used these disease conditions to push an agenda, is my point.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Yesterday, I was reading an article. It's called Vaccines Did Not Save Us, and it has two centuries of official statistics. And basically, what the data, if you really look at the data, what it shows is that the things that really have improved the health in the West over the last two centuries has been better food, clean drinking water, improved sanitation, less overcrowded living conditions, and also an improved education system. So really the issue has been public health and also a society in which people felt that they could participate and have some justice. And those are the things that are slowly being taken away, not only in the Western societies, but the developing world is not able even to have these sorts of things without the World Health Organization and people like Bill Gates pushing vaccines on them.
Well, I got a little side story here, just a quick vignette. A very famous guy here, and I don't remember his name. My wife told me the story about a very famous singer here in France who raised a bunch of money here in France and went to Africa and used the money he raised to put wells in for people, for communities that didn't have fresh water wells. So he bought drilling equipment, and he went community to community. He was murdered, and they know he was murdered for his work in Africa. He wasn't murdered because he had done anything wrong to anybody. He was bringing clean water to places that were disease-ridden because of their water system, and he was killed for it, and which is an amazing concept to swallow here, that the people in power would want to kill off someone trying to save people's lives in that way.
It's not amazing because that's the policy of the United States of America.
Yeah.
Policy of the United States, ever since Kissinger wrote his National Security Memorandum 200 and Brent Scowcroft, I think it's 314 Executive Memorandum, confirm that that's the policy of the United States. And basically the policy of the United States is to see that countries that have strategic minerals that they want do not increase their population. And the reason they stated this in that memorandum is that young people are restless and they will fight for what they want. And if you reduce the population and if you keep them at a particular level, then they're not going to be able to resist when the West comes in to steal their resources.
Zimbabwe comes to mind now. They've decimated that population, and it's always been clear to me that the Western powers were keeping Robert Mugabe in power. And they were slowly destroying the population base in the outlying areas. And lo and behold, 6 or 8 years after they did a full-on destruction of that economy with hyperinflation, now they're moving in the big mining companies from South Africa that are starting to find less and less minerals in South Africa because they've been mining it for the last 50 years. Over either 100 years, and now those mines are starting to be played out. They're getting lower yields, and now they're moving that same equipment north into Zimbabwe because it's virgin mining area, and they needed to get rid of the population. So voila, presto, changeo, we got Mugabe coming in. We got starvation happening. We got farms being shut down. That used to be the breadbasket of Africa. Now it's the poverty basket of Africa. And it's interesting that, you know, people claim that he's an enemy of the West when, in fact, he's a puppet of the West.
Well, Africa has not had an African leader who has been for the African people since the 1970s, late 1960s, when—and I write about this in my book. About Templesman and his relationship to the Oppenheimers in South Africa. Yep. And the diamond and gold mines, because every African leader who has expressed a desire to take care of his people has been either assassinated or deposed. And so they replace these people who want to use their own resources to improve the continent. They replace them with people like Mobutu Sese Seko or Kagame or you know, any one of these, as you say, puppets who basically dance on the same strings that Mobutu did. So it's right now it's very difficult in Africa, largely because these mining companies who have access to these private military contractors, and also the who seem to use the mining wealth to flood the continent with weapons, and now they're beginning to flood Africa with drugs as well.
And you know, the story is the more current story that's been going on in Chad and in Sudan with the Janjaweed, when it was found out that the weapons that were being given to this supposed Arab marauding gang called the Janjaweed that were murdering the civilians were coming from Israel. And in fact, there was a direct Israeli connection to the Janjaweed's armaments and their actions there. And they've also been using parts of Ethiopia, taking over the land and doing these big factory farms. Israel owns these properties, and they produce the foods that are being eaten in Europe and in other parts of the world. And so, yes, they're coveting the land. They're destroying the populace. They're taking the wealth and doing it sort of behind the scenes. I mean, people like myself and you, we see it. I think a lot of people do.
Well, that is one of the reasons why AIDS has been so important in the takeover of Africa, because if the world can be made to believe that these poor, pathetic Africans are just dying of this because they can't control their sexuality, and because of their own lack of self-control, they're falling apart and their countries are falling apart. Well, that's a great image, because now you have the great white fathers from the mining companies who actually know how to run things, who come in and take over, and then you have the great Bill Gates with his vaccines, who are coming to give all of these terribly infected people these vaccines that will save them. And so the image you get is that the Africans are totally incapable of taking care of themselves, and the West has to come in and save them.
Well, in fact, they have proven themselves incapable of mounting a resistance against these criminals, partly because the education of these people has never been in the direction of any of the facts. And so they don't have any of the facts to go on. They often know that they're being subjugated by the powers that be, but they don't know how to win out against them. And you can see it over and over again. They keep putting puppets in, and within 3 years, that puppet that they installed is a billionaire. He's got a house in the richest neighborhoods of Paris. He runs off with a few billion, and they put another puppet in, and it goes on and on and on. And
but Daryl, is that, do you really think that's any different than the puppets we have running our government in the United States? Or
no, they just let they've just in the past let the Americans keep a little more of the money. Now that's right. That's ending now. That's ending.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we have one here. You have Sarkozy. Yeah, you know,
exactly.
It goes on and on and on.
That's right. That's right. And the problem I see, Nancy, for them, this crime gang is being exposed more and more as time passes. The internet has provided, the rank and file with at least partial facts, if not, if you're listening to the French Connection, most all the facts. But it's getting out, and I mean, as far afield as, you know, my third largest group now. It used to be China until they shut me off. I can't get into China anymore for some reason.
Oh, is that right?
I was getting 3,000 visitors a day from China, and now that went down the drain.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, they stopped me there, but now they've the South Koreans are my third largest audience. Now, I don't know how the South Koreans can even listen to my broadcast, but apparently they're coming to my website in droves.
Well, is the South Koreans, or do you think they're Americans on the bases in South Korea?
It could be. I'm getting 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 hits some days, and for a period there, it was, you know, it's huge. The numbers are huge, but The point I'm trying to make here is that they have a problem. The problem is if they overtly try and censor the internet and start getting rid of people like myself, which they've gotten rid of some people, they've killed them. The fact of the matter is that there's always going to be someone to take my place. So they're in a quandary or how to control this information. And as this the populace, I believe, gets more and more angry, Nancy, they're finding themselves being exposed, and people are not they've suspended their disbelief in my information and said, okay, I'll give it a fair hearing. And once they do that, I've got a convert. As soon as they're able to suspend the system they've come from, and that cognitive dissonance starts to calm down a little bit, and they start having the ability to say, well, maybe my government is evil, now they've made the leap into the facts, and boy, the learning curve just accelerates from there. It really does.
Well, I'd like to just say also how, and this is something that your listeners may not have focused on in this way, is that how medicine as a discipline, the allopathic medical system, which is what is practiced in most Western countries, how it's been used as a method to disempower people and to take more and more freedoms away from people.
Yes.
And this is very important for people to understand, because, you know, and I'm not saying that to distrust your doctor, because many of the doctors are unaware of the extent of this control, and some of them simply don't want to know. And a lot of them are overworked and are not focusing on what they need to focus on. But this is what you need to understand. The healthcare system is controlled. It's another pyramid scheme. It's controlled at the very top, as we were saying in the beginning. There are people at the top who make decisions. The decisions have nothing to do with whether or not something is going to be best for the public health, but whether or not it's going to A, offer another method of control, and B, be profitable. And that's why they can make up diseases. That's why last winter they could create a scare of a bird flu pandemic or swine flu, the swine bird flu, when they knew perfectly well that there was not going to be a pandemic. But there was an effort in all of these countries to buy these vaccines, which were literally worthless.
And one in my country that I'm living in, France, took it. Nobody did. They flat out refused. And they ended up ordering two a shot for every person in France, and almost no one took it. No one.
And so now, as I started out at the beginning of this, saying that we have the statistics, and we know that it was not the vaccines, but it was the standard of living that improved over the course of the last 200 years in Western countries that contributed to the rapid decline of infectious diseases. As a matter of fact, we know from the statistics in the United States that since 1955, infectious diseases have not even been a problem in the United States. Yet, they are continuing to push one vaccine after another. The hepatitis has never been a major problem in the United States, and yet they are requiring all newborns to take a hepatitis vaccine.
Is it required, or can you opt out of it?
Every state has an opt out, but the people don't really know about the opt outs because they are not given that information. For example, the states have a right. The states actually, it's still a state right. The government cannot, the federal government cannot force you to take a vaccine because it would be against the Fourth Amendment. Mm-hmm. But what happens is that every state has the option of having three opt-outs. One is philosophical, one is medical, and the other one is religious. Now, in the state that I live in, it's only the medical and the religious opt-outs. The philosophical is no longer given to people. But the parents don't know this. All they have to do is say to their pediatrician, for religious reasons, I choose not to have my child vaccinated. The pediatrician, because of the First Amendment, cannot challenge them. All they do is give them the form that the parent fills out, and that form goes into the chart, and that form also follows that child to school. There, and the schools cannot then discriminate against that child based on those religious beliefs.
Okay. Actually, there are some states challenging your, if you're not attending a religious, organized religion, they actually have been challenging it. I think, where was the state that it was? Might have been Maryland. A couple of school systems were actually saying you had to take it.
No, it was Maryland. The attorney general of my county actually told people that they had to take the vaccine, but there was an uproar because he never told people that they had opt-out provisions.
Ah.
He made it sound as so the kids, so even kids who had vaccines and their parents couldn't find the records were getting their kids lined up to get revaccinated so they could get into the schools, but he never announced to the parents that you have options.
Ah, okay.
That was
right.
The big hullabaloo.
Yeah. Well, so here we are, Nancy. It's 2010, going into 11. The entire experiment of America and its allopathic nightmare that is built is really failing. It's failing miserably on every front. But Europe is going with it. We see that the system is now being so taxed, both by money and health and every other way you can think of being taxed, environmentally taxed. I mean, there's not a single area that we haven't taxed our world to the hilt, and we are on the verge of a collapse, I believe. And I mean, the financial collapse is almost a given. But the medical collapse and the social order collapse and the scramble for world's control of elements and forests and all water systems and all that. We're on the very end of this fight here. It's all coming crashing down around our ears as we speak. I'm wondering how you treated the lead up to this. I mean, because this really took off, as you said, in the 1970s under the tutelage of Kissinger's Secretary of State. He actually ran the White House, as far as I could see. But we've seen it kind of seamlessly continue on all the way to the present. Where in the book do you treat this, and how do you got us there through history? I know that you go into the opium wars, and you go into the Delano family making money, and we get involved in Oppenheimer down in Templesman, and now Templesman's interesting because he was the paramour of Jackie Kennedy at her death, best friend, and the rest of it. What most people don't know is her name was Levy. She was Jewish heritage, called herself Lee, of course, but she was a Levy. And Mr. Templesman, of course, is Jewish, and his work with Oppenheimer. So this stuff actually moves into what we know today as a Zionist bent. And again, I'm not blaming all Jews for all of this stuff. Many people are not aware of the depth of this criminality. But how does your book treat these subjects?
Well, one of the things I started out with is the book called Tragedy and Hope by Carol Quigley.
Yes.
And A Tragedy and Hope is a huge tome, which I suppose they thought many people wouldn't read, but more people probably have read it than they wanted to, in which Carol Quigley is a very highly respected, prominent historian who was actually given access to many of the papers and the internal workings of this group of people, of high-level financiers, who had this dream of consolidating the planet under one financial scheme. And so I said, okay, if Carol Quigley, who is a very well-respected chronicler, would actually come out and say something like this, then there must be something to it. It's just not a, quote, conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started looking at the banking structure and how the banking structure was really behind everything. You know, it's interesting in this country, you can talk, there are certain things you simply cannot talk about. And one of the things you cannot talk about in this country is the Federal Reserve and the banking system and how the banking system works. You simply cannot talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Only people like you have been talking about it, and with this meltdown, certain other people have been coming out and talking about it. And it, interestingly enough, even this Tea Party, when it first started, it's a joke now, but when it first started, it actually came out against the Federal Reserve and these too big to fail banks and the TARP.
Yeah.
But that was diverted very quickly. So I started looking at the banking structure, and so once I started looking at the banking structure, I began to see how this sort of this unseen hand has really been directing the course of Western civilization for several centuries,
yeah.
For a lot of centuries.
Yeah. Well, one of the great heroes, and I know you've looked at his work as well, one of the great heroes of the last 50 years, of course, is Eustace Mullins. And Eustace's work on the Federal Reserve and death by injection, he keyed into these very important control points that these people have used in a way that few people had before him. And, you know, and if you add to that the Quigley book, if you add to that Ben Friedman's warnings, if you add to that the history coming in from the century before, you know, the First and Second World Wars formations and how that all happened, it's very clear to see a chain of events that is leading us to this disastrous endgame that we're in now. And you don't even have any questions anymore once you've done the research. It's a slam dunk that this is what is happening. And you also get an idea of who's doing it, because at the very apex of this conspiracy, it always it ends up at the same hands, the same people. It's an Ashkenazi, what I call a Zoharitist group. They're Sabbateans. They are the Frankist movement. They are the Stern Gang. They are the Irgun. They are the New Bohemians back in the day. In other words, you come back to the same group at the very top, and every single area of importance they've taken over. And you talked about this Krim woman. You know, I question whether she was ever Catholic. I think she was probably a crypto Jew, and she, you know, Catholics don't end up being trusted within the Irgun. Look at the way the Jews are racist against anybody non-Jewish. She'd have never been allowed to be at the top of the Irgun if she wasn't naturally Jewish. Take a look at Mr. Sarkozy's entire heritage is Jewish, but he claimed to be a Catholic. But, you know, of course, his son just married one of the biggest Jewish heiresses in Europe. And the fact is his grandfather was a rabbi in Salonika, Greece, where they launched the takeover of the Ottoman Empire. And so the fact is we have this condition called crypto-Judaism. Madeleine Albright was a crypto, and John Kerry, a crypto, and Wesley Clark, a crypto. And, I mean, I can go down the list. But the point I'm trying to make here is that you always end up with the same group, Nancy, always.
Well, the question that I also have is, and this is for the sophisticated West, is why do they continue to allow this to happen to one country after another?
Yes. Well, yes.
You know, it's not as if there's not a history, but yet and still the same thing continues to happen from country after country.
Yes.
But I want to get back a little bit to the medical aspects of it, because again, that's another method of control.
Yep.
And because people do trust the medical system. For example, one of the things that I think that has happened in Europe under this European Union is that they have passed this thing called Codex.
Yes.
And under Codex, they're trying to make uniform standards for all nutritional products. And what has been happening in the United States is that there has been the FDA has been launching a frontal assault on nutritional product makers, as well as producers of organic products, whether it's raw milk or even cooperatives that are selling organic produce. We see that SWAT teams are coming in to literally scare these people and to put them out of business.
Mm-hmm.
So when people think that they have healthcare freedom, I'd like to know where it is, because it hasn't been completely shut down in the United States, but they're trying to make it more difficult. And the question in my mind are companies such as Whole Foods, and I have no evidence for this, so I'm not saying that Whole Foods is doing anything, but as these large supermarket chains and these large agribusinesses find that they're having competition. If they go where the consumer wants, are they going to now cut out the smaller competition as they have done historically? So that, okay, we'll give you organic food, but we're the ones that are going to supply it.
Well, here in Europe, the Codex Alimentarius legislation has been put into practice. What they have not stopped access to the nutrients. What they have done was made them incredibly expensive, so that if you're going to make that kind of choice, it's going to break your bank, absolutely break your bank. And you often have to go through the prescription process to get some of them. They're still available, but what they've done is that, first of all, you can't go up to a shelf and kind of pick it out anymore.
They made it very difficult to get them.
That's right. But it is still available. You can get Q10 and you can get those different things. But you have to go through all kinds of hoops. And then when you find out a 200 milligram capsule of Q10 is €2 here, you look at it and you go, holy smokes, that's a €60 a month bill to take this stuff. You know, and so and that's just one of the nutrients you might be interested in taking.
So that's what I mean. So the keeping people healthy is no longer something that governments desire.
That's right.
Because what kind of government would make it difficult for their citizens to be unhealthy? Now, you have to ask yourself, what kind of mindset is doing that? Because if you're running it, again, we get back to this population reduction business.
Yep.
Because what kind of government would not want its people to be maximally healthy? Because Daryl, today there is so much research on the need for additional nutrition. For example, we've talked about vitamin D before. We've talked about CoQ10. We've talked about curcumin.
Yep.
We've talked about all of these things, which we now know have such wonderful benefits nutritionally and can help to keep people in a better state of health. So what kind of a government is it that would make it so expensive to have good health that you would have to take drugs that never improve your health, simply take care of a particular problem that you might have?
Yes. Well, that's what they've done here for sure. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what they're doing. That's the goal for the entire planet.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you started looking into this, were you surprised by anything that you found specifically? Because I'm sure you had inklings during your professional career as a medical doctor that something wasn't right. And certainly with your own personal experiences of your own health and those of the people around you, were there certain things that really shocked you about the research?
Yes, I was overwhelmed by the corruption of the pharmaceutical industry. I'm still overwhelmed by it.
Okay.
And I'm overwhelmed by how they keep the physicians ignorant, how they rig their studies, and how they keep data from the treating physician. So the treating physician is the intermediary between the drug company and the patient. So if the treating physician is ignorant of the complications of a particular drug, and they are being taught by the people from the drug companies that these drugs are good, then the treating physician becomes an instrument of death that puts the drug company can say, well, you know, the treating physician should have known better. But the treating physician is only getting so much information.
Yeah.
And that's very dangerous, because that means the idea in the United States, at least, is that the patient should have the ability to have what we call an informed consent. That is, you as a sovereign individual should be allowed to know what the risks and benefits of a particular treatment are, so that you can make an informed decision as whether or not you want to have the risk to get the benefit. And that's an impossibility at this time.
Well, you know, Nancy, when you started looking into there's a merger between money, healthcare, drugs, natural resources. They all kind of have a nexus. And that's one of the things that I so enjoyed about your bringing these things together. In the book, you go off and tell a historical story about opium and about all these other things, but you always bring them back to this nexus of this controlling entity. And it's a powerful indictment of these people in the book. And I have to tell you, there's only a few places that have treated this full subject like you have. Of course, some of the forerunners I already mentioned, such as Eustace Mullins and even Carol Quigney. But to bring it up to date, as you did, is what has, you know, inspired me to enjoy the book in the way I did. It's not an enjoyable subject, but it's an enjoyable education, because everyone needs to know just how dire our circumstances are. And the medical side of things, in spite of all of the news and information that's out there, most people are still unaware of it, Nancy. I mean, look, nobody's fighting back in the communities. I come from a pretty wealthy community in Massachusetts, but there's nobody clamoring for the elimination of fluoride in their water. There's nobody screaming. No, so how effective have we really been informing them?
Well, you know, a couple of years ago, I remember, and this is, I want to give people an example, so that, because people say, well, what are you really talking about? For example, one of the drugs, I'm an obstetrician gynecologist, so of course, one of the issues that I deal with was women who were going through menopause. And so I remember when in the 90s, I think, when I was practicing, I remember going to a lecture that was given by a cardiologist who likely wasn't paid to the pharmaceutical industry, and it was about hormone replacement. And at that lecture, they were really telling the obstetricians the gynecologists how great estrogen replacement was, is because it was going to help, you know, osteoporosis. Not only was it good for the hot flashes and the night sweats and the mood changes, but it was going to actually help all the osteoporosis, and moreover, it was going to really reduce heart disease, but if you give women this hormone, it will help reduce heart disease. So after a few years, and we don't have to worry about the breast cancer, because there's not a significant increased risk of breast cancer. So anyway, we fast forward a few years, and we find out that the hormone is not particularly the best thing for osteoporosis, that the women who take it have an increased risk of cardiovascular events, and that the increased risk of breast cancer is significant. Now, I sat there in that conference and listened to that information given out. So as a physician, I thought, okay, that's good to know, and I can feel a little more comfortable prescribing this drug to patients. And then a few years later, you realize that you've been giving a drug to patients that really is very damaging. So and of course, with the obstetricians, when I first went into practice, we had this drug called we had the remnants, something called DES. It had been prescribed to women a generation ago to help. They said it was going to help prevent miscarriages, but it was an estrogen. And what it turned out to do is to, in the offspring of those women, it created infertility and cancer. Mm. So, and over again, I was seeing drugs that were being really pushed into onto women, and within a few years, these drugs would really have some serious side effects, including death. Finally, towards the end of the time that I was practicing, I basically told the drug reps, if the drug has not been on the market for at least 5 or more years, I'm not using it. Because the truth of the matter is, I was turning my patients into guinea pigs by using any of these new drugs. And I had it at that point, because I had been practicing long enough to see so many lies of the drug company that it really began to disturb me, and I simply was going to, I felt that I needed to protect my patients from this kind of racket.
Well, and now, and it hasn't abated. I mean, what we saw in the 90s was the consolidation of control over the drug companies. We saw,
it's gotten worse.
Yes, we saw SmithKline merge with Glaxo. We saw Merck get involved in takeovers, and we saw Pfizer and Serrano and all these different companies go out and build stronger, more powerful lobbying machines and more powerful company pipelines. And a lot of these drugs have just been rubber stamped by the
It's even worse than that, Daryl. For example, in this AIDS crisis, if you're a physician and you have really read the literature and you realize that this AIDS thing is an overhyped, made-up disease in order to sell product, if you begin to actually treat your patients nutritionally or treat them different than the standard of care that has been defined by the pharmaceutical industry, the next thing you know, your hospital will start getting letters complaining about you. And the next thing you know, they are going to go after you in some way. They will go through your charts and they will find some error and they will put you on suspension, or they will find somebody to sue you, or they will do something to really attack you. People have no idea what is happening to their physicians behind the scenes if the physicians really do not want to follow these prescribed trends.
So in order to treat these people and keep your job, you've got to be on the QT. You say, look, go home and these are things I want you to do, but you don't write it in the chart.
The thing of it is that you have to be very careful, because this is the other thing that they do, and this is the Gestapo part of it. If they find that you are actually treating your patients nutritionally, they sometimes send in false patients to entrap you.
Wow.
So, you know, because I know people like to say doctors this and doctors that, but you have no idea the pressures that the doctors are under to conform. And that's how I'm saying how freedom, health freedom, has been taken away. Not only has it been taken away from the individual, it has been taken away from the physicians as well.
It's the same in France. And if your doctor, you know, your doctor can't liberally prescribe certain things, the Central Security Sociale here in France gives them a list of things they're allowed to do and allowed to prescribe and allowed to act upon. And even these small GPs in the small communities, which I told you, Nancy, they still have house calls here. You can still get a doctor to come to your house. Mm-hmm. But the fact is their hands are tied as well. And it's not any different. It's a different system, but the control is the same.
Right. And so that's what, and see, it's all this control behind the scenes, which you never really think about being control. But for example, if you're a physician and your first aim is above all, do no harm. So in that oath, you would say, all right, if someone comes to me and they have this particular problem, and I know from reading, and we're not talking about something out in left field. We're talking about known things in the scientific literature. For example, the fall comes, and I know the days are getting shorter, and you live in the northern climes, and I know that your vitamin D is going to drop. So I can say to you, I would rather have you take some additional vitamin D rather than for you to take this flu shot, because the studies show the vitamin D is more effective than the flu shot in preventing what is coming for the fall.
Well, and hold on, we talked to go back in the archives, ladies and gentlemen, and listen to Dr. Hollick, Nancy Banks, and myself talk in depth about this particular subject on the French Connection, and it's very important information. I just wanted to let that in there so people know that there is a whole host of different issues that we covered on vitamin D already, and it's very important stuff that we did, Nancy.
So, and thank you for doing that, Daryl, just getting that message out. So in the fall, if you start getting a little sniffle or something, if your vitamin D level is good, then you want to start taking some additional vitamin C or some other, you know, or the curcumin or some of those other nutritional elements. But you still, even if you get a virus, your body is able to ward it off in a very short period of time, and you don't have to worry about secondary problems. But there's all this fear. The fall is coming. You have to get your vaccines. And everywhere in the United States, the supermarket, the drugstore, who would go into a supermarket and get a vaccine? I mean, good grief, who is giving you the vaccine? Where's the vaccine coming from? I'm buying my meat over there. Do I want to get a vaccine in the same place I buy my vegetables
and
my meat?
Let's talk for a minute about vaccines and how they attack you, because the adjuvants used in vaccines are many, many. There's aluminums that are used. There's thimerosal, which is mercury. They're using denutered virus in some instances to get you all sicked up. And My point to you is this, is that you're taking a toxic cocktail is what you're doing, and especially to young people. This is why it's so dangerous for young people, because these mercuries build up in your body, and of course, we've got an explosion of autism, and they keep denying the link. In fact, the medical system in Britain just came out and said it doesn't have any link. We don't see any link to autism, which is nonsense, because there are a couple of countries in the world that don't use vaccines. They have no autism.
Well, we don't have autism. There's almost no autism among the Amish in this country who don't use the vaccines.
That's right.
So we have a population in our country already that we can compare the other people to. I'm originally from the Midwest, and in the Mid, there are a lot of, both in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois, there are fairly good-sized populations of Amish. And autism is practically unheard of in that community, except sometimes when they've adopted babies, the babies have to get the vaccines before they can be given up, and those are the only children who seem to be developing autism. But autism, you know, historically was unheard of until basically the 20th century, when mercury started being used in industrial purposes. Remember the Mad Hatter?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
In Alice? I mean, why was he mad? He was mad because hatters used to use mercury in making felt hats.
Yep.
But again, this is, you know, sometimes I think in the future, you know how we look at the past and we say, oh, those people used to sacrifice their children. They had human sacrifices. But we in the West sacrifice our children to the vaccine gods. I mean, it is going to be, people are going to look back on this time and say, how could they have been so stupid?
Yep. Yep.
To give their children over to the vaccine gods. And that's basically what we're doing. It's like voodoo medicine, and yet people do it every day.
Well, and to say these things is a heresy in this world, you see. And it's no different than being, taken to task for saying the earth is round. I mean, you know, we're in that same thing. I mean, if you start going out and saying that these connections are clear in your mind and your research shows it, you are committing you're a heretic, and you're going to be attacked. And
well, that's but you know, it's all, again, it's the power trip, and it's about control, and the people who have the control have the bully pulpit, and it doesn't really matter what this, you know, we're not talking about science here, we're talking about politics.
Yes.
And so the science, so you can read the science, and you can say, okay, this is what the science says. But again, we go back, you know, we started this with Matilda Krim, and we can end this with Matilda Krim. Because when people like this come along, and they're very powerful, and they want the world to have a particular point of view, then of course, Edward Bernays knew how to sell the point of view, and they're very sophisticated at it now. So they will sell that point of view. It doesn't matter what the truth of the matter is. It matters what the point of view they want to sell. And so it really is left up to us to be a little more sophisticated about which of their messages we buy or don't buy, because most of the messages are a point of view and have nothing to do with objective reality.
Well, here in Europe, there's an explosion in demand for non-bio, they call them biofoods. They're non-genetically modified, and they're natural, and they don't use pesticides. And they're quite strict here. You have to have your land have no chemicals in any contact to your land for 5 years before you can become certified.
Gerald, we are not even having that conversation in the United States.
Well, here, you know, nobody buys eggs unless the eggs came from a free range. In other words, they're not made in factory egg farms. These chickens they run around in the yard pecking the ground. And anybody who's had a free-ranged egg can attest to the fact that the flavor is completely different, and the quality of the yolk is completely different. On top of that, there's an issue of torturing the animal. On top of it, we don't have hormones in our beef here. The French don't put fluoride in the water. There's no fluoride in any fresh water.
Well, Daryl, that's why you have millions of people in the street there protesting, and we don't have anything going on over here. People went to the polls yesterday like sheep to vote for the two controlled candidates who were given to them and think that they have a democracy.
Well, and isn't it funny that the American establishment during the first Gulf War and all the rest of it savaged the French as being a bunch of cowards and chickens, and they called them freedom fries, not French fries, and all this nonsense. Because in fact, the French have been up against this crime gang for a long time. Now, granted, I don't think they're any more clued up on who's ultimately behind this than anybody else is. And that's evidenced by the control of their medium. Every single presenter on French television is Jewish, and there's only 1% Jewish in France, but their control of the media and the presentation is absolute. And they own all the businesses, and they own all the large corporations. So it's no different than in America, and I don't think they know the truth here either. But they're willing to pound on the pavement and get some answers. Now, I'm hoping that, against hope, that this protesting in France was not a flash in the pan. It may well be. You know, they have seemed to have calmed down somewhat. But
well,
these
riots they anticipate them in the World Bank and IMF documents. They anticipate these riots and they sort of wait them out because they're going to raise in France. They're going to raise the age of retirement to 2 years, and they're going to because the trend is right now to cut social spending in the Western countries to bring the standard of living down in the West.
That's right.
And that's what's going to happen. And the stupid people are going, I know in the United States, they just put all these Republicans in thinking that they're going to be anti-Obama. But what these Republicans don't understand is that their standard of living is going to go down because people are going to come in. They're not going to go after the banks. They're going to go after whatever they're going to go after their pensions. They're going to go after their Social Security and all the safety nets that have been put in place. So if that's what people want, that's what they're going to get. I think that's not what they want, but that's what they're going to get.
Well, I think the die's been cast for our future. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to win this battle in the end, because I do believe there's a real surge in wanting to know the facts. And, you know, that's evidence. You've been following my work and other people's work that's similar for the last few years, Nancy. You've seen a growth in this information almost across the board. I mean, it was very difficult to find good information on these subjects a few years back. Now it's not quite ubiquitous, but it is certainly available. And if you do a little homework, you're going to get to the truth.
I think you are, but it takes some time to get to the big picture. And I think, unfortunately, most people spend their lives looking at the trees rather than trying to look at the forest. And right now, we need more big picture people. We need people to really, for example, if you're an economist, you have to look at this thing from a point of view. I'm a physician, so I looked at it from my point of view, but I had to step outside of the boundaries of just talking about medicine in order to come to an understanding of how something so horrible is creating a disease that didn't exist and then giving people drugs that would actually harm them would be okay. I mean, the idea that the disease was created and then people were given a drug that could kill them or cause cancer to treat a disease that didn't exist in the way they said it existed was just an appalling idea to me. And now I know that it's something that is being done not just with AIDS, but as I said, with the vaccines and with all of these other things. So even the cholesterol, and that's a whole nother story. But what they do is they create crises, and it's the problem reaction solution kind of thing. They create a crisis, and people say something must be done, and then they already have what solution they're going to put forward, and then the people say, okay, well, we'll take that solution, but the solution was something that made it worse.
Well, I hear so many, I read so many things, and, you know, some of the good information that you put out just a moment ago by talking about curcumin, talking about some of the natural cures and, you know, ubiquinol, which is the reduced form of Q10, and all these other important things that we can do to help ourselves. Chlorella, getting rid of toxins from our body, they're a very good chelator, and all of these different things that we can do to help ourselves, because you told me that the disease process, especially cancer, is something to do with an imbalance in the kind of the electrical system. There's oxidizations and all kinds of things going on in the negative. And if you can somehow balance that negative with some of these positives, you're going to remain in a health stasis of good health rather than a slippery slope of ill health. And is that a fair assessment of what you've taught me over time?
Everything, you know, Daryl, I think everything in our lives is about balance, whether it's our personal lives, whether it's the world. For example, the world cycles and our bodies cycle, and we have multiple cycles in our body, and these cycles are all controlled at the quantum level by photons. But this is, or electromagnetic energy. So at basis, we are still electrons and protons. And so we get caught up again in the trees. We get caught up in the gross bioanatomy and the biochemistry. But that's us at the grossest level. At the finer level, we are basically energetic beings. We are thermodynamic systems that are open to the environment. What does that mean? That means that we stay in a particular homeostatic balance. What disturbs that balance? For example, if we're the toxins that we've talked about disturb that balance, and the reason they disturb that balance is because they create too many structures called oxidizing agents, which take away the energy. As a result of this energy imbalance in our systems, we begin to see diseases. And depending on what, now this is where the genetics come in, depending on what your predisposition is, where you will harbor a disease. For example, some families are more prone to heart disease, some more prone to kidney or liver disease, et cetera, et cetera. But at base, all these diseases, whether they're chronic diseases or these infectious diseases, start because we are out of balance. We are out of energetic balance.
Well, for a further show, not necessarily in the next week or two, but I would like to talk about solutions, Nancy, with you, because you are an expert in health because you've spent your lifetime looking at it. And now you've had a jaundiced eye against the established norms, and you've been able to step outside of it. Maybe a 60-minute program on how to solve some of these important issues for people would be very helpful. I think it would probably be one of our most downloaded shows we'll ever do, because it's things we can do in our immediate to give ourselves a better health. And you've mentioned a few, like curcumin and the rest, but there are...
Mostly I'd like people to challenge people to take their power back. You know, the healthcare system, you know, again, 100 years ago, people mostly took care of each other when they got sick, and they had a lot of knowledge, home remedies, and what we call folk medicine. So I'd like people to challenge people to not be fearful of regaining that knowledge.
Yes, yes. And I live next door to an herbalist, and some of the things that she recommends to cure things like comfrey oil and marigold and the rest of it have been used for a thousand years. And they're effective at certain things. Some of them are more effective than anything I've ever... for example, this comfrey oil, if I got a burn, I put a little bit on there the following day. I mean, it is over with. I am shocked by the speed at which this stuff works. And, I mean, she's got a million of them, and she's a registered licensed herbalist. She went through school for it, and, you know, you can't walk down a country lane with her because she just goes through, like, an encyclopedia of, well, that's the zuba-duba-daba-daba, and she says she knows every single...
But the bottom line is that the body has this innate ability to heal itself, yep, given the right things that it needs to heal.
Yes.
So that's our goal, is to begin to figure out what are the right things that we need to give ourselves in order for us to stay in balance, or if we get out of balance, how do we get back in balance?
Well, we've done over an hour here. The name of the book is AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire, The Deadly Virus of International Greed by Nancy Turner Banks, MD. Nancy, you have a website. Would you give your website details to the listeners, please?
Yeah, people can read the first chapter of the book at nancybanks.us. Okay. And it is AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire, the Deadly Virus of International Greed.
Well, I'm going to put a link up with your name to a website that they can buy the book. It'll be not Barnes & Noble. It'll be Amazon so that people have a route to the book. The book is well written, extremely easy to sit down with, Nancy. It's not pedantic, and it's not over termed. You don't use too many big terms that medical professionals would be, you know, understanding. Anybody can read this book and get a great deal out of it, and I've enjoyed the style very much. Now, the subject matter is dire, and it's very important that people be brought up to speed on these facts. And I appreciate you sharing this time with me. I really do.
Well, thanks, Daryl. Thanks for having me again.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this broadcast of The French Connection. I want you to really check out this book if you have an opportunity. I'm not sure what the price is. You'll have to check that on Amazon, but I'll put the link up with it. And until the next time, take care of your families. You know, we are in this mess together, and we're only going to get out of it if we stick together. So take a look at the people around you. If they're in need of help, reach down and grab them and help them, because the strengthening the masses as we do go along here, we're going to have a better chance of straightening out these problems for the rest of us. Until the next time, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please be well. Bye-bye now.